Let us read the fourth verse. Tatah padam tat parimarvitavyam yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuyah tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatah pravrutte prasruta purani. తమేవచ ఆద్యం పురుషం ప్రపద్యే తతఃపదం తత్పరిమార్గితవ్యం అన్వేష్టవ్యం జ్ఞాతవ్యం. దట్ పదం, దట్ అబోర్డ్ హ్యాస్ టు బి నోన్, మీనింగ్ ద సెల్ఫ్ హ్యాస్ టు బి నోన్. హౌ ఇస్ ఇట్ టు బి నోన్? ఇట్స్ ద శ్రవణం, మననం, నిధిధ్యాసనం త్రూ లిసనింగ్ టు ద టీచర్, reflecting upon that, meditating upon that. And throughout this, so while we are listening to the teacher, while we are doing manam, reflection upon what we heard, while we are meditating upon what we understood, throughout that, what is the attitude? The attitude is one of surrender. What's the nature of surrender here? I am surrender to Ishvara. And I am surrender to Ishvara in the sense that I want to know Him. This is the jignasa, the jnata vichcha. The only thing that the student has in the mind is desire to know. There is no other agenda. So there is no other desire, no other expectation, nothing else to achieve. That is why vairagya was so important. Vairagya or dispassion, being an important qualification or an important disposition of mind, is important for this reason that, as I said, if there is any agenda, then that is what keeps our mind occupied. And we want our mind free from all occupations. We want the mind to be occupied merely with what I want to know. So even while doing listening also, the only thing is I want to know, I want to know, I want to know. That's the only agenda. That is called surrender. What other surrender is that? Meaning that I have surrendered all my other desires. As Lord Krishna says, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Sarva dharman parityajya, parityajya. Very well, giving up all the agenda. Make me your only agenda. So, mamekam sharanam vraja. You surrender yourself to me. Meaning that, make me your only agenda. So, for a student who wants to know Ishvara, the only agenda is Ishvara. So, by grace of Ishvara, I want to know Ishvara. Even if I am seeking something from Ishvara, it is His grace so that I gain the knowledge. So all along, idea is that surrender is for seeking grace of Ishvara. You require the grace of that which you want to know. Any such object you want to know, you investigate what it is, you require the grace of this object, meaning that that object should become favorable to you so that you can understand what it is. And therefore in any knowledge, two aspects are involved. One is, I am striving to gain the knowledge. Secondly, what I want to know also blesses me, becomes favorable to me, makes itself available to be known, reveals itself in my mind. You see? So this flower should reveal itself in my mind, then alone I can know the flower. Similarly also, Ishvara should reveal Himself in my mind. As the 10th chapter says, तमेवानुकम्पासम अहमज्ञानं तमः नाशयामि आत्मभावस्य ज्ञानदीपेन भास्वतः तेषामेवानुकम्पासम. लॉर्ड कृष्णा सेज व्हेन आई फाइंड दैट माय डिवोटीज आर सोली डिवोटेड टू नोइंग मी, दे डू नॉट वांट एनीथिंग एल्स, देन देयर इज अनुकम्पा. By compassion towards them, I reveal myself in their heart. So when the knowledge takes place, is it my effort because of it the knowledge has taken place, or is it Ishvara's grace that he has revealed himself to me? The self. So when I know anything for that matter, even when Newton discovers the law of gravity, is it he who can be credited for knowing, or that law of gravity reveals itself? It's both ways. It is hard to say what it is. But in our Swamiji's word, a graceful way of saying, the graceful way of saying is, it is grace of Ishvara. That is, every knowledge is gained like that. It is Ishvara, who is all knowledge, reveals himself to me. So even in the worldly knowledge also, knowledge is revelation. So whether it is law of gravity, whether it is right, anything, small or big, anything that we know is what? When that thing gets revealed in my mind. So you can say that it is that. You solve the problem. The problem of mathematics, any kind of problem that you solve, from engineering, physics, mathematics, medicine, whatever problem you solve. So you're struggling with something. Struggling to understand what it is. And all of a sudden the solution strikes to you. It's not unusual. So when it strikes to you, who should get the credit? You should get the credit for striking, or that has revealed itself to you. However, you can get some credit also in as much as you were totally devoted to understanding it. I was struggling. So there is some part of me which is called devotion. What is bhakti? A total commitment. So when I was totally committed to know, all discoveries are all like that, you know. Where you see those scientists who have discovered anything, they were totally devoted to that, investigating for a long time, and then something struck. Sometimes they say some discovery will come by accident. That cannot be an accident. His mind was struggling with something. He wanted to discover something and something else came up. Okay. But the mind is the mode of discovering. Mind is devoted, completely committed. So that commitment is called devotion. Therefore, in Jnana Yoga, so called, you know, Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga, path of devotion, path of knowledge, but devotion is not something separate. Even in knowledge also, there is a devotion, meaning there is a total commitment, that's what you want. As long as your mind has any other preoccupation, so long the object of knowledge remains elusive. Ishvara as though does not reveal himself in our mind, as long as the mind has any preoccupation other than Ishvara. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. You give up all your preoccupations, all your agenda, and devoted, totally get devoted to me. Then I will reveal myself in your heart. So on the part of the devotee or the student of knowledge, there is a total commitment. All I want in mind. So yame vaishyamunade ten labhya. So one who chooses Ishvara, by him the Ishvara is known. What is when we are choosing Ishvara? That's all I want to know. I do not want anything other than knowledge. In my life, I want nothing other than knowledge. Because I recognize very clearly, so the only problem in life is ignorance. So that understanding has come, that whatever is depriving me of my goal, what I want to reach in my life, what is it, what's the distance between myself and what I want to reach? Ignorance alone creates a distance. Just as in case of the tenth man, so what's the distance between the one who's searching for the tenth man and the tenth man? Ignorance. And when ignorance goes, the distance goes away. So also, what is it that is separating me from Ishvara? Ishvara is my own self. What is separating me? Ignorance. Ignorance has to go. Then I recognize that Ishvara is my own self. And so my prayer constantly, I want the ignorance to go. So prayerful mind, you listen. With a prayerful mind, you pursue this knowledge. And the prayer is that all I want is this knowledge and nothing else. Because if something else is important, it will occupy your mind. You will not have a sustained commitment, you know. So what we want is a thought flow. What is called meditation is when the same thought flows for the same kind, uninterrupted by any other kind of thought. So that is called, so tame purusham prapadye, I take refuge into that purusha, I take refuge into the paramatma, call him paramatma, Ishvara, the self, the truth or the reality. Inasmuch as all I want is that alone in my life and nothing else. Yamaya vaishavnate tena labhya. Upanishad says, tasyesha atma vivrunate tanum swam. The one who chooses the Lord, to that person the Lord reveals himself. So you choose the Lord and he chooses you. Arjuna chose Lord Krishna and he chose him. Meaning that, so ye bhajanti mam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. Normally Lord is indifferent to anything. Tamoham sarabhuteshu name dveshu vasti napriyaha. I am equal to everybody. Good, bad, indifferent, whatever, I am equal to all of them. I have no aversion, I have no partiality, I have no cruelty, I have nothing. He's a saint, sinner, whatever it is, I am equal to all. So that God is no good for us. We do not want that Lord is equal to us. We want him to be partial to us, understand? So right now he is sitting in my heart. He is myself. He is watching all my struggles and not doing anything. So we do not want an indifferent God who is sitting in the Vaikuntha or sleeping on his serpent bed and in his own world and not concerned about us. We want to be concerned about us. That's called bhakti, which makes this Lord partial. So usually Ishvara is impartial because everybody is my child and I am same to all. But that will not, you know, there will be no end to that business. You want him to specially, you know, choose you. As our Swami says, standing in long line of security at the airport, such a long line, his plane is leaving after 20 minutes, and this security will take at least 1 hour. He says, resigned, my flight is gone today. So if he stands in line, his turn will never come, not in time. He needs some favor. And fortunately, an agent comes along, Ahmedabad, 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 you know. Yes, 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 yes. Okay, you come into the special thing. So he's taken to a special security line and taken to the airplane. That's what we need. If you have to stand in line like that, aneka janma samsiddha, God alone knows when the end will come. So we want his favor. It's important. So even a person who is pursuing knowledge, favor, because you want to know Ishvara. And whatever you want to know, his favor is very important. He should become favorable to us. He should become favorable so that he reveals himself to us. Yatah pravritti prasuta purani. He is quite clear as to what I want. Yatah pravritti yatah purani pravritti prasuta yatah. The fifth case, from whom? Pravruttihi, this activity. Purani, the beginningless, the ancient, the beginningless. Meaning from whom this whole universe has come out. From whom the whole samsara has come out. From whom the tree has come out. I want to the root. So the description of tree is given so that we develop a vairagya about tree, so that you are then focused upon the root. So what is evident is universe of names and forms. But what's the root of that? Is Ishvara. Yatah pravritti prasuta purani. How the whole tree has come from the roots, is it not so? The tree has come from the roots. Who is the moolam? Who is the root here? The root is Ishvara. What's the tree? The whole universe is the tree. So now from I withdraw my attention from the tree, and focus my attention on the root, that is Ishvara. That's Vairagya. Meaning, withdrawing the attention from name and form and focusing upon the root, which is Asti, Bhati, Priyam. So therefore, what do you want in your, what do you want to know? I want to know that reality from which this whole universal activity has come about. As I said before the end of the, last class is how a magician throws his net and all the spectators are under spell of the magic. So also Ishvara as though has thrown a net of magic and all of us are under the spell. We need the favor of the magician to release us from that spell. Because Mama Maya Durathya, Lord Krishna says, my Maya is difficult to cross. Maneve prabhajyante, Maya me tam tarantite. Though, however, those who take refuge unto me, they can cross this Maya. Therefore, tameva adyam purusham prabhajye. I take refuge unto that Purusha or that Ishvara from whom this Maya and all activity has come. I don't want this Maya. I want the source of Maya. I want the very root of Maya, the adhisthana of the Maya, the substrate of the Maya, which is Ishvara, which is called Purusha here. Purnatvat Purusha, because he is Purna, he is complete. Purishena Purusha, because he is the self of all. Or yenam sarvam purnam, yena purushena purnam. So, yasmat param nasti param asti kinjit, yasmat namayona jayavasti kaschida, rukshami vastabda divitishchati. As we chant that prayer every day, that purusha, he is the one without a second. So, that is the one I'm seeking in my life, that's the one I want to know. Katham bhutaha tatpadam gacchanditi. Next verse we are told, katham bhutaha tatpadam gacchanti. What do you have to become? What kind of a disposition of mind do you know? What kind of a maturity of the mind do you know? So what should be the attitude you should develop that you can attain that purusha? So what kind of effort we should make? What is called devotion? So what kind of an effort does a devotee make to prepare himself? You see, if you want to go, if you want to have an interview with the Queen of England, you can't go in this dress. You have to dress properly. Only Mahatma Gandhi may be allowed, you won't be allowed. They court you for a long time as to how you should present yourself, how you should dress, how you should do it. Then only you can get an interview, even in the glimpse of the Queen. So what sort of king of all the kings? To get the glimpse, you know, you must prepare. This dress is no good. You must prepare. Have a proper dress. What dress? In the mind. This dress is an outward thing, but is an indication of the state of mind, disposition of mind. So katham bhutaha tat padam gacchanti. The question is asked, katham bhutaha. What kind of people are they who are able to reach that abode from which there is no return? So the fifth verse tells us the qualifications. What is meant by devotion? In the pursuit of knowledge, what is meant by devotion? What should we be doing in order that we are called devotees? We should be constantly preparing our mind so that Ishvara is obliged to become favorable. We oblige him. So he has no choice. Teshayanukampartham ahamagnyanam tamah. Tesham anukampartham. An anukampa, a compassion arises in his mind. Then your job is done. But until then, you have to work hard to deserve his compassion, to deserve his favor. So, to prepare ourselves, our mind, such that we become fit for receiving the grace of Ishvara. That is what he described here. So, Lord Krishna here gives a broad outline of what kind of people are there, who are the seekers, who are the aspirants, who can gain this knowledge. So the fifth verse is Nirmana Moha Jita Sanga Doshaha. Adhyatma Nitya Vinivritta Kamaha. Dvandvai Vimukta Sukha Dukha Sanghehi. Gacchanti Mudha Padamavyayantate. See, the last line says, Gacchanti Amuraha Padam Avyayam Tat. Amuraha Tat Avyayam Padam Gacchanti. See the translation. Amuraha, those are free from delusion, moha. Muraha means mohitaha, those people who are delusion. Moha means delusion. Moha means delusion. Muraha, one who is deluded. Amudha, one who is free from delusion. So we are in delusion. Who is a deluded person? Either he is lost, or is deluded, meaning that he takes what is wrong to be right, and therefore misses what is right. So the world which is unreal is mithya, is taken to be real. That's the moha. Who is avivekaha, superimposition, not seeing things for what it is, seeing it different from what it is. For example, seeing a snake where inside there is a rope. That's called moha, avivekaha. Atasmin tadbuddhi, various different adhyasa, adhyaropaha, mohaha, brahmaha. Different words are used. But the standard example is rope snake example. Seeing a snake where in fact there is a rope. Rope snake. This is called moha. And that's the kind of problem in our life. Seeing a snake where in fact there is a rope. For example, seeing an inadequate self where there is a complete self. So what's the nature of the self? Purna malaha. The self is purnaha, is complete. But how do I see? I see myself as an incomplete, inadequate self. This is called moha. This is what? How are you going to translate it? Illusion, if you want to translate. So moha means seeing what is not there. Or seeing what different from what there is. Seeing snake where there is a rope. So seeing inadequacy, where there is adequacy. Seeing limitedness, where there is limitlessness. Seeing incompleteness, where there is completeness. So self is complete, limitless, adequate. And seeing the self is incomplete, inadequate, limited. This is called moha. World also. World is names and forms. World is what it is. But looking upon that as a source of happiness is moha. Seeing happiness where it is not. Like seeing that necklace where it is not is called moha. Thinking. Seeing is different thing. What is thinking? To see a necklace in water is okay. But think that it is lying there, this is called moha. Seeing the world is not moha. Taking it to be real is moha. So thus, things reflect happiness. They create appearance of happiness. Taking the appearance to be real is moha. So thus moha, avireka, delusion obtains in our life. In terms of the self also, with the self that is complete or limitless is seen as incomplete, limited, inadequate. And that arises on account of the identification of the body-mind complex. Taking body to be myself, so I look upon myself as a mortal being. When I take body as myself, then the birth of the body becomes my birth. Swami, today is my birthday. Why your birthday? Swami's birthdays are also celebrated. So everybody's birthday. I was born so many years ago. Which is true and not true also. Something was born that many years ago, 50 years ago. What was born? The body was born. What do I say? I was born. So birth is there someplace. But we are seeing it where it is not. Snake may be someplace, but I am seeing it where it is not. So birth is somewhere. Where is it? In the body. Where do I see? In the self. And so, what obtains in one place, seeing it in a different place called moha. This body-mind complex is limited. So limitedness is there someplace, but not where I see. Is there in this body-mind sense complex, alright, but not in the self. Who am I? So I am the very witness of them. But then, so limitations, in short, the limitations, inadequacies of this body-mind sense complex is seen in the self. What is non-self is taken to be self. And therefore, the dharmas or all the limitations of non-self are thought to be belonging to the self. This is called moha or delusion. This moha has to go. Meaning that I have to know the non-self as non-self and self as a self. Jagat is mithya. The names and forms are not real. Meaning that they don't have an independent reality. Like, for example, this pot is mithya, they say. This pot is mithya. What does it mean? The pot does not have an independent reality. The substance in my hand is not pot, it is clay. So we are designating this clay as a pot. What it is clay. Pot is there something incidental. The clay gets an incidental nomenclature called pot. If the pot falls from my hand, and then it will have a different name, and then you crush to powder, it will have yet a different name. So the names and forms are subject to change. So what is changing cannot be real because the changing always depends upon something that does not change. A train can move upon motionless tracks. The tracks also are moving and train also is moving. That cannot be. So, the movement of the train is possible when the tracks are motionless. Flow of the river is possible when the bed is not flowing. So also, the change called the pot is constantly changing. It's possible when there is something that does not change. So, we say pot is mithya. The clay is real or satyam. Similarly also, the jagat or names and forms are constantly changing. That shows that they do not enjoy a reality of their own. The reality comes from something else. That, going back to more fundamental thing, this pot is because it is Atma or it is Brahman that provides existence to it. The pot shines because it provides the shining to it, illumines that. Pot able to shine because it illumines my consciousness. No, Swamiji, pot shines in the light of this bulb. That's all right. The pot shines in the light of the bulb. That is true. But suppose your eyes are closed, can you see the pot? Even though the pot is shining because of the light, is it possible for a blind person to see it? Meaning that you require some other kind of light also. For seeing this pot, not only do we require the light of this bulb, or the daylight, as the case may be, but we also require some other light. What is the light? The light of the eyes. The eyes are illumined, the eyes illumine the pot. But, and eyes themselves also, what happens is, even the pot may be in front of me, and I may still not see it. Eyes are there, but when my mind is not attentive, when mind is distracted, then sometimes thing is right in front of us and still we fail to see that. Which means that the eyes also are illumined by something else, and that's the mind. So pot is illumined by the eyes. The eyes are illumined by the mind. The mind is illumined by the consciousness. That's how in the ultimate run, this pot is illumined by consciousness. So when can pot be known? When illumined by consciousness. When can the pot be? The pot is because of clay. The clay is because of molecules. Molecules are because of the atoms. Atoms are because of subatomic particles. They are because of something. And like that, if you stretch, this inquiry, where will it ultimately reduce to? Existence. And therefore, is something that provides existence to the part, because of which the part is. Something that illumines the part, because of which the part is known. And something that makes this part very dear to me. That's why the part is some attractiveness. Asti bhati priyam. Therefore, what is why? Name and form. Names and forms are not the ultimate reality. Meaning what we see or perceive is not the ultimate reality. If you investigate that, just as if you investigate what this part is, it reduces to clay. So also when you investigate what the names and forms are, they reduce to asti, bhati, priyam. That's the reality. Thus, knowing that the world has its basis in asti, bhati, priyam, or satyam, jnanam, anantam, or satchit, ananda, that is called amoha. To think that names and forms are the ultimate reality is called moha, delusion. To know that this is a relative reality, it is because of asti, bhati, priyam, satchit, ananda, that names and forms are, is freedom from moha. To think that the self is limited is moha. To recognize that the limitations belong to non-self, and in spite of the limitation of non-self, self is limitless, that is called freedom from moha. Amudha. So people who become free from this moha, from this delusion caused by ignorance, padam avyam gacchanti, tad avyam padam gacchanti. They attain that avyam, the imperishable padam, or the abode. So that imperishable and imperishable abode they attain. Meaning they gain the knowledge. So what is knowledge? Knowledge is becoming free from ignorance. What is ignorance? Ignorance is in the form of delusion. What's a delusion? Taking the non-self to be the self. Taking the self to be limited. Taking the names and forms to be real. And missing the reality. See, when the attention is focused only on the part, then we miss the reality which is clear. That's called attachment. So sometimes we become so attached and preoccupied with the part, by its shape and its usefulness and how beautiful it is and what shape it is, what design it has, what carving it has, what painting it has, and what material is filled in that, who made it, when it was made, which pot maker made it, something is an ancient, it's an antique pot. All these details about the part, all this preoccupation of the part, very often we miss the clay. Although it's obvious, you know, but in Swamiji's words, missing the obvious. We miss the obvious. That is the clay. Similarly, Brahman, of course, is always experienced, but is missed because of our preoccupation in the names and forms. So, what is the state of mind do we require? The mind that does not project. Mind that sees non-self as non-self and sees the self as self. The mind that sees mithya as mithya and sees satyam as satyam. That is called amoha. It's called freedom from moha, freedom from delusion, freedom from ignorance. For that, we should develop the qualifications. So Lord Krishna says, who are the people? Amudaha. Who are the people who become free from that moha delusion? Nirmana moha, jita sanga dosha, adhyatma nitya, vinivritta kama, sukha dukkha sanyai, dvandve vimukta. This is what we have to do. That's called devotion. Why? So if you are devoted to knowledge, then all these things become valuable. Otherwise, who cares for this? Nirmana moha. So those who are free from mana means demand and demand for respect. So translation says, what is manam? Manam is demand for respect. What is moha? Moha means delusion. So one of the things that we are suffering from is called manitvam. Lord Krishna is only giving us outline of the qualification, that's all. All these are described in detail in the 13th chapter, in the 12th chapter, 13th chapter. Here, see, it is necessary to say this. Just Lord Krishna is reminding us of what we already said earlier. Look, if you want this knowledge, then you should have a certain disposition of mind. You should have certain preparation. Every knowledge calls for a preparation. As Swami says, you cannot learn calculus if you do not know 5 plus 4 is 9. If that also you do not know, there is no way that you can learn calculus. For learning calculus, for learning what is taught in the university, you must have the background of the high school. And what is taught in the graduate school, you must have the background of the undergraduate. What is taught in PhD, you must have the background of the master's. What is postdoc, then you must have the background of the doctorate. So every form of inquiry, investigation, knowledge always requires a preparedness. Even to use your microscope, you require a preparedness. Those microscopes are no more like that stuff. They are all electronic microscopes and they require very technical stuff. Everything requires preparedness. But in general, every form of knowledge requires preparedness. Similarly, this knowledge also requires preparedness. What is preparedness? Preparedness means a certain disposition of mind, a certain frame of the mind, certain preparedness of the mind. So we have to constantly strive to prepare our mind. That will be called devotion, devotedness. Nirmana Moha. Manam is translated as demand for respect. Manam means translation demand for respect. So we demand respect from others. That's one of the fundamental problems. Demanding respect from others. Demanding approval of others. Demanding mercy of others. Demanding favor from others. That makes us totally dependent. Because if respect becomes necessary, then since I cannot bring about the respect from myself, if I can bring about respect from myself, no problem. The reason why I demand respect is I don't have respect. See, desire always is for something that I don't have. If I'm only living in a house, I'm not going to ask for a house. If I already have a car, I don't ask for a car. I ask for what I don't have. I don't have manam. I don't have self-respect. Therefore, I demand respect. So, generally speaking, we all demand respect in one measure or the other. When this demand crosses certain line, then it becomes a big problem. This Swami, this person is very touchy. Very sensitive, very touching. Just one word also will upset the person. Who is a touchy person? Who gets upset in no time? There are some people who get upset in no time. What do you need to upset them? Nothing. You don't even know that you have done something and they get upset. So more touchy we are, what does it mean? More needy we are, what is it? Need of respect. Need of acceptance, need of love, need of acceptance. So this very, we are all in need of that anyway. When there is ignorance, and when I look upon myself as a limited being, I do not feel good about myself, and usually therefore there is a general self-dissatisfaction, a general self-non-acceptance. This is there in everybody. Every ignorant person is going to have this in one measure or the other, not being comfortable with myself. So how can I then? That is the reason why I say I demand that you do something to make me comfortable. So what's the basic demand? My basic demand is that others should do something in order to make me comfortable. So we should know what will make them comfortable first of all. to fulfill the demand, we should know what will make them comfortable and then do it. Sometimes, even if you want to make somebody comfortable, sometimes you don't know. So in your way, you are trying to do something and it backfires, you know. Like, we think that, you know, feeding somebody, so I remember many years ago, when we were brahmacharis, so everybody used to volunteer. Very little volunteering I have done in my life, but this was one, that serving, standing behind that table. And as it is a line, serve them. So then I would serve them rice. So then I took a big helping. I thought bigger the helping you give them, you know, more you care for them, that's what you think, you know. You think that more you give them, more care you are showing. That person got upset, he said, don't give me them, you know. I was shocked. So sometimes you try to please a person, that very action of pleasing displeases them. So it is very difficult to know. And more incomplete we feel, more uncomfortable we feel, more sad we feel, more demanding we are. We are all sad in one way or the other. But more the sadness, more the demand. More the demand, more the sensitivity. More the sensitivity, more the touchiness. This manam, demanding respect, is a fundamental human need, and that is a big obstacle to knowledge, because what does knowledge require? Knowledge requires self-acceptance. When do I know myself? When I accept myself. I want the self to be favorable to me. When can self be favorable? When I accept the self. If I want you to be favorable to me, I should accept you. I cannot expect you to be favorable to me by disrespecting you, isn't it so? By rejecting you, or by disrespecting you, I cannot expect a favor from you. So for knowing the self, we say that, what do we require? We require the favor of our own self. Very important qualification. What is it? Favor of our own self. Favor of our own mind. Favor of our own personality. Lord Krishna says, Atmaiva Hyatmano Banduhu Atmaiva Ripuhu Atmanah. Ourself can be our friend, ourself can be our enemy. So, we have to make ourself our friend. Then, my demand for respect will automatically go. The extent to which my self becomes my friend, my mind becomes my friend, to that extent, I am comfortable with myself, and the extent to which I am comfortable with myself, my need for you to make me comfortable will go down, and that's how the manam, the demanding respect, will go away. So, nirmana, those people are free from demanding respect. Anyway, we can start by stopping to demand respect. Meaning that we do not make demands upon other people that they should respect us. But Swami, you know, the way this person treats me, the way the person talks to me, accept the people as they are. This is how they are created by Ishvara. They do not have a choice to be different from what they are. There is nothing I can do about my nose. If my nose makes upset, what can I do now? Sometimes our looks make people upset, you know. Why do I look like you? What can I do? That's how it is. That's how my nose is, that's how my ears are. I can't help it. If that's your problem, then I will always remain a problem. So people are a problem to us because their nature is like this, they talk like this, they behave like this, they don't do this, they do that. Accept them as they are. That is how they are created by Ishvara. Therefore, or better than that is, whatever they do is called respect. Suppose you have, you know, suppose you are in need of respect, then whatever they do is called respect. But Swamiji, he abused me. Call it respect. That is his way of respecting you. That seems to be a little impractical thing, but anyway. But nirmana, one from whom this need for demanding respect has gone away. And this was discussed in great detail when in the 13th chapter Lord Krishna says, Amanitvam, Adambhitvam. Manitvam, as I said, the need. People demand, make demand not for no reason, because there is a need. Need for respect is there. And that is because the person is not aware of respect himself or herself. So when I do not respect myself, I need respect from you. Because I need to feel respectable anyway. If I am not respectable in my perception, I should become respectable in your perception. When you respect me, then I feel that I must be respectable. I don't think I'm alright. I don't think I'm respectable. When you respect me, then I feel that I must be respectable because you say so. There was so much need on my part for you to appreciate me. Swami, your lecture was wonderful. I feel so good. If you don't say that, I think my lecture is wonderful. If you don't say anything about it, I think that they have not liked it, you know, today. So, all these problems. I have a problem with myself that I can be happy only when you make me happy. You make me happy by when you respect me, when you appreciate me, when you praise me. This is a losing game, you know. And therefore, you can, even if people give you respect, sometimes their way of respecting may not be good enough for you. Even if I respect you, you may not call it respect, you know, because you have your own definition of what is respect. So it's a very difficult thing. And even if you respect, then my demand for respect will increase. What happens is, even when people respect us, what happens is, we need always more and more and more. So therefore, the demand is something which is like a fire. And more you feed into that, more demanding it becomes. Therefore, we notice this tendency in ourselves. So whenever we find this tendency in ourselves of demanding respect, we should educate our mind. Oh mind, don't make demand for respect. Because you will always be frustrated. You learn to respect yourself. How do you become free from this demanding respect? By self-acceptance. By respecting myself, I become free from the need of being respected by others. How do I respect myself? By accepting myself as I am. Accept myself. Accept my limitations. Basically, accept my limitations. Our problem is because they are limited. I am limited in memory, limited in knowledge, limited in smartness, limited in strength, limited in this. All kinds of limitations are there because of which I feel so bad about myself that I am a limited person. I am no good. Accept the limited person. Accept myself as a limited person. Accept my limitations also as a reality. And that there is nothing wrong in being limited. It is quite all right to be limited. To discover that I am limitless requires me to accept my limitations. To develop a comfort with myself. I cannot remember something, I cannot remember something. The problem comes because I keep on comparing myself with others. He is so bright and I am not. You know, his memory is amazing, you know, I can't remember what you told me 5 minutes ago. His grasping power is fantastic. We keep comparing ourselves and always blame ourselves or always brand ourselves inadequate. And that's how we start disliking ourselves. So this comparison, because of a need to become somebody else, there is no need for me to become somebody else, there is a need for me to own up what I am. If what I am was not meant to be, Ishvara would not have made me like this. Ishvara has given this body because that is the right thing for me. He has given this mind, so it must be right for me. He has given this brain, it must be right for me. You always have freedom to improve. No, nobody says that you don't learn more. Nobody says that you don't, you know, change. Nobody says that you don't improve. But not by hacking, by you know, all the time, punishing yourself. You don't have to bash yourself to go up. Swami, if you are satisfied yourself,